Where I'm obsessed with is taking bets where if I'm wrong, I don't die, and if I win, I retire.
Constructing your life is about much more than just building a bank account. Each week, join mindset coach Austin Linney as he interviews guests who are constructing their dream lives and impacting the world around them on a daily basis. If you're an entrepreneur or wanting to start a business, or you just want to hear motivating stories of how others have overcome the odds, you are in the right place. And now for your host, Austin Linney.
Guys, welcome back to Construct Your Life. We call him John. Don't talk about his mustache. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. So what I like to do is kind of give your like backstory a little bit, where you want to start, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Sure. Yeah. So grew up on the East Coast, went to school in Philly, and then was in the government, working in the Middle East and North Africa, doing kind of like national security type stuff, which was fun. They taught me Arabic. Good stories I can tell you in person over a beer. And then was living in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates and decided I want to move back to the States. And so started looking to buy some small crappy companies and did that, but was able to kind of have some success with some of them and kind of leverage my way up in terms of buying better businesses, better, you know, just better everything, but kind of worked my way up from a early mid-career. I spent, you know, a while in the government, but I wasn't like retired or anything. So, but now do a lot of stuff with global talent, some stuff with tech and automation, and just having a blast, man.
As we sit here today, what is your current obsession?
Helping businesses that make, that do less than $50 million a year in revenue, hire global talent and use it effectively.
And what is your definition of effective?
Business changing, meaning it is not a sideshow. It is a whole, it's like when they started using the internet the first time, because that's what I believe the magnitude of the change is. If they think it's a sideshow, they're not, they don't know enough about it. And when they start thinking about it, like how did the internet change companies in 1999? That is the correct way to talk about global talent.
And what do you think that their mindset around global talent is? Where are they missing the boat, and where do they need to be educated?
I think there's probably two categories. The first is people who've never hired globally before for their businesses. And those people think it's somebody with a bad accent in a, with a headset in India or Philippines, mm-hmm. who is a bad representative of your company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're crappy, and it's the people when you're trying to rebook your flight on Delta and you're pissed. That's who they think global talent is. And those are great countries. I've been to India way too many times. Philippines I've never been to, but I've hired a lot of the Philippines. They are great for certain things, but that is not the extent of global talent. So there is a variety of regions. There are people who increase the quality of your services, who speak English better than you do, who have master's degrees, who know technology better than you do, who know customer service better than you do, who know Service Titan better than you do, whatever. And so just that's the first category, is to get over that kind of hurdle. And then the second category is people who've only ever used global talent as kind of like low cost VA types. Like, yeah, they book my meetings, and it's like, you're leaving. That's like saying I only use the internet to send emails. That's useful, but there's so much more to the internet than just AOL.com.
And then, and I'm trying to buy a business, I search for AOL.com. but what's interesting, right, is like, okay, I love using me as an example.
Sure.
Okay. Cause I love to call myself out on my own podcast. I've been looking for a chief of staff assistant kind of like for 3.5 years, failed 3 times. Not people that are near me, but just kind of haven't found the way. If I'm looking to do that as a business owner, a CEO, and try to elevate and streamline my operations, do I need to get right with myself first? Or do I need to hire somebody like you that understands what I'm looking for, that can help me build out the thing instead of me just trying to find it myself?
Yeah, good question. So you can always DIY, just like, you can DIY fixing your car. Like, there's no shame in that. If you know what you're doing, you'll probably do a great job. You might make some mistakes, whatever, right? You don't have to spend any money. You'll spend a lot of time, but you won't spend a lot of money. If you're looking for help, there's definitely some best practices floating around. I mean, just as a piece of advice, what I've seen is the reason why I use Global Talent is because I can't afford to pay top talent in the US. So not hard to have a chief of staff if you have venture cap money and you can pay $185,000 plus stock options. Mm-hmm. I don't run businesses like that. Like, that's like foreign to me, right? Elon Musk mm-hmm. needs a chief of staff. He pays $500,000. That's his chief of staff. So I have to basically build them. And typically what I've done when in terms of building, I have a chief of staff who's been with me for 7 years, is they start as a high intelligence, high aspiration, high figure it out muscle assistant. And I build them into a chief of staff as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. Hiring one off the shelf, a big part of the chief of staff role is kind of an intimacy with the way you like to do work. Mm-hmm. And the best way to get that is to start them as an assistant. And you see if they're any good. They don't work, fire them. They work. Ooh, okay, give them a little bit more responsibility. And next thing you know, you got a chief of staff who's kind of like herding the cats, who's incredibly impressive.
I love that. And so one of the things that intrigues me the most about you is the way that you think about and look at business, right? And I love to vision out. I help people with branding, you know, all that kind of stuff, different strategy. I'm not a spreadsheet guy per se, but I understand the mechanics of human psychology, right? When you're building a business or looking to buy a business, like, what are the things that a person that's going to do that is not looking? Like, I think that a lot of people look at the wrong metrics. From your point of view, what are the metrics that you look at that they're not paying attention to?
I think a lot about, in a business, center of gravity, which is a concept from the Marine Corps, or I think of center of gravity, or I think of bets. And that's what I think of that nobody else thinks of, which is, when I buy this company, what am I betting? I'm betting that I can generate home improvement leads for less than $300 that can close at 40%. That's my bet. Now, do I like that bet? That bet I like. I bought a company under that bet. But in an IT company, I'm betting that I can source quality engineers in Northern Alabama for less than $70 an hour. Do I like that bet? Maybe. I don't like that bet because I don't know what the F I'm doing. You know, I buy an HVAC company. I'm betting that I can keep the senior managers around because I don't know shit about HVAC. So I always think in terms of bets. I'm betting that this land will appreciate as the DFW region expands north, not east, like everybody thinks, and everything's overpriced over there. So I always think about bets, which is, what am I betting on, and do I like that bet? So like, what am I betting on when I buy this piece of dirt? And just literally think of bets. 80% chance that DFW actually ends up growing north, not east, like everybody thinks. And with the price that I could buy this dirt, good bet. Or, shit, that's a terrible bet. Everybody knows DFW is not going to go north. It's going to go west or what. So I think in bets is how I think about it.
It's such an interesting way. I never thought about it that way, because I'm on this kick right now where I think business plans are useless.
Oh, yeah, I don't do business. I've never done a business plan.
I mean, like, I was talking to Josh Schmidt about this. Like, think about the concept of getting an SBA loan. I'm just saying, I don't want to send you off here.
Oh, I will. Don't.
I know.
That's like triggering me.
I know, but listen, I didn't realize it till I said it, but let me get it. But think about it. Like, you're the exact person I want to talk to about this. Okay. This is perfect. Okay. Cause I don't have a fully formed idea yet. Okay. So I'm going to walk you through the scenario. Cause this is what my mind.
That's never stopped me before, by the way.
This is what my mind is thinking about. So you have a bank, right, that has an SBA loan, that has a boss, whether it be the federal government or a boss, and they say, these are the boxes that you have to check for this loan to be funded. Then you have an operator who doesn't believe in any of those check boxes, and yet he has to either change his business plan or change the way he looks at the business so he can go get the loan and be somebody he's not, only to not do any of the things they need to check the boxes. And now we have a group of individuals on both sides of the transactions faking what they actually care about. Does that make sense to you? It just doesn't feel genuine to me.
I think it's, I've was always deeply affected by Nassim Taleb's writing, if you've ever read any of that.
I just started Fool by Randomness. I just started.
Great choice. There's a lot of other Skin in the Game is a wonderful book as well. And then his whole Inserto series is really powerful. I was deeply affected by his speaking about this. And where I think it is when I talk about that stuff, I think about false precision. That's what I think about. That's the word that just hits my head, which is we're going to grow 2.8% next year. 0.8? What the fuck are you talking about? Like, and so where I'm obsessed with is taking bets where if I'm wrong, I don't die. And if I win, I retire. It's easy to risk a lot and gain a lot. No. Risk asymmetry. Small risk, big upside. And when you put your huevos on a line, you have to make all sorts of guesses and precision. And sure, you underwrite it and you look at what it did last year and trying through. I know all that stuff. But ultimately for me, I like asymmetric bets. And look, sometimes you got to blow on the dice and put it all on red. That's your only option. But I think most people have more options than they think. They don't have to do that in order to launch their entrepreneurial career.
Guys, let me take a minute to tell you about my buddies over at LeadHub, Ben and Aaron, the best humans I know. Not only are they amazing at marketing for trade companies, but Ben started his HVAC company in his garage, sold it for multi-million dollars. So when this guy talks, I listen. When we took over Dietz Mechanical, we had 22 reviews in 22 years and 7 short months. We went from 22 reviews to 107. We went from a 4.2 to a 4.7. We tripled our Facebook presence and we tripled our calls. If you're an HVAC, plumbing, electric, landscaping company, and you're looking for a no BS approach to marketing, you're looking for people who have done it before, you got to go to leadhub.net.
I have a friend who works for the UT Endowment Fund. He manages $5 billion. He's the exact opposite of me. He just bought his first investment property because he's not that type of guy. But yet he does $350 million trades. It's a weird kind of thing. And we talk about all this stuff. And I think the thing, like, I'm 41 now. I think the thing, if I could go back and talk to anybody younger or like myself, I would have literally said at 18, go work for somebody or just take massive swings and see if one of those things hit, because I'm still taking risks now, but they're different and they're more calculated. And so I think that's my message to everybody is when you don't have as much to lose, like, take those home run bets.
When I was transitioning out of the government, I basically said, I'm going to live like a pauper until I figure out how to make money entrepreneurially. Because I knew, the two most, Nassim Taleb, two most addictive things in the world are carbohydrates and a steady paycheck. And so I knew that the minute that I tasted the sweet nectar of a steady paycheck, it would be very hard to go take swings again. Very hard. You have to like pull yourself out of that machine because it's so addictive. And so I was fortunately able to, keep my lifestyle so low until I figured out how to be a good business person, which I now am. I think I am.
Okay. And then because I like to poke the bear sometime, what is your issue with SBA loans?
Sure. So I'll start by saying what I don't have an issue with. So I do not have an issue with debt. I do not have an issue with debt to acquire things. I also do not have an issue with the SBA 7A loan program. Don't have issues with any of those three things. The issue that I have is with people who think that acquiring a business is the way to enter entrepreneurship. That is the issue that I have. And more specifically, not even acquiring a business with SBA 7A personally guaranteed debt where they take your home, depending on what state you're in, if you're wrong. Now I didn't exactly start like this, but I bought a business very early in my entrepreneurial journey, but I didn't use personally guaranteed debt. I used a seller note and a little bit of cash from friends and family. That's how I bought, right? Or I used foreign investor money. I got creative with how I acquired it. The issue that I have largely is countering the narrative of people who are involved at the transaction, people who sell courses, masterminds, loans, who say it's the easiest and safest way to be in small business. And I'm like, anything that can kill you. If I start an Etsy shop and it doesn't work, I lose 15 grand. If you try to buy a business, an HVAC business that's subscale, that's overpriced, that you have no fucking clue what you're doing, and it goes under, you move in with your parents for the next 5 years. And so I think it's reckless to be telling these people that it's a good way to get going in entrepreneurship. Now, they come work for you for 6 months, a year, in your business as your right hand in HVAC. And then they go, you know what? I've got a sense of this business now. I want to buy. Love it. Game on. I bet you Austin probably give you the equity. Yeah. I would, if somebody had been with me for 6 months or 12 months and I was like, oh, you're an adult. You understand what it means to be a general manager of an HVAC company. Yeah, go buy one. Great. I'll fund it for you. But what I have an issue with is these people sitting behind desks watching a mastermind and then just YOLOing into a $4 million PG debt. You know the stress to have 45 G's a month in payroll? And sorry, not payroll. Debt? That's recourse debt? It's just like, it just bothers the fuck out of me. And so I'm just like, you win by surviving. You win by surviving. And that's a really good way to die or survive on life support, just making the debt payments and paying yourself $1,300 a month and having to sell for evaporate your equity or take a haircut or stay on the note while somebody else runs it. And it's just like, it's just fucking reckless, man. And these people on the internet are going to really fuck some people's lives up. And as a real business person, which these people are not, I feel a responsibility to bang that drum.
I would say that I knew what I was getting myself into, but I really had no idea. The worry about payroll and always
dude,
hitting
the payroll
it.
Sweats. The payroll sweats.
Dude, if the first month I started running the company, I woke up every morning in cold sweats. Like,
dude, the payroll sweats.
And like a couple months ago, I had a couple panic attacks. Like it was real. Like it was real life. And you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, like, okay, like my little like business, my like coaching, my consulting business that I've been running for years, it's me. I show up, I get paid. That's it. No payroll. But dude, 45 employees and having to feed that beast every week. It never goes away. Like this is real life and people aren't talking about it. It's really sad.
That's my point. And I think, you know, employees getting in car accidents
happen.
Fatalities. People don't understand what it means to run one of these companies. And so I am the biggest cheerleader for small business, entrepreneurship. I will never do another thing in my entire life, ever. But I just get pissed when people are bullshitting. They're just totally bullshitting. They're just bullshitting. And so you look and you say, here's what I wake up. I want to tell you the truth. I will never do anything else in my entire life. However, I dry heave every week before payroll because I'm so stressed. And I've been sued more times than I can count. Mm-hmm. And I got stolen from by people I trusted. And customers call myself, yada, yada. And you go, but by the way, I'll never do anything else. I'm an entrepreneur through and through. Do you still want to do it? And if they say yes, God bless them. Here's my cell phone number if you close. But don't fucking lie.
We showed our guys 2 days ago what we make after we pay them, and they were like, oh, y'all are broke. And we're like, yeah, guys, I make money 10 years from now. You make money tomorrow. Like this is a long-term bet, and I'm going to continue to grow a big business. But, I mean, I could go through right now in 12 months what's happened to me. I mean, it's the craziest thing in my life. I've been sued multiple times. I've got people personal investigating me.
Shaken down by labor attorneys.
That's happening. Wrecked the car in the middle of the night. I mean, you name it. It's done it.
I had to stop putting my cell phone in my room because I would get emails about people quitting. And I would ruin my sleep. I'd be up the rest of the night.
Yeah.
So I stopped putting my cell phone in my room. But it's like, I guess... And I want, it's so important to me to hear. I am not a fucking wet blanket. I am a career entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I will never do another thing. I'm the biggest cheerleader, but I'm not one of these people who fucking lies.
Yes.
Like, so that's how I feel.
Well, I think what's interesting, right? And regardless of all that, like what I kind of the phrase that I came up with is so interesting to me. I'm 41 years old. I have employees from 17 to 70. And so my 60-year-olds and 70-year-olds, they don't need rah-rah and they don't want rah-rah. But my young guys want this thing. So understanding how to articulate the hopes and the needs of all the employees and understand that at the end of the day, you can think that they're bought into this whole like family thing. And it's like, no, they're here because they're getting a paycheck. They're happy to support, but you got to keep feeding them. And you got to keep them turning wrenches, right?
And that's okay though, right? Mm-hmm. It's okay, which is, you know, I always think of myself as the leaders. One of my jobs as the leader is to be able to withstand the pressure.
Yes.
That's part of my job. I get mm-hmm. paid for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't get paid every 2 weeks by ADP. And so what I mean is I don't get offended when people leave. I'm just like, dude, God bless you. Mm-hmm. I don't expect it. I mean, I would love it. But it's just, no, man, if, you know, it's like the old joke. It's like, if you ever die in your house, like your cat will start eating you after an hour, but your dog will wait 2 days. It's like, we're the best friends ever. But if I'm not paying you, let's see how quickly they talk about how good, you know, yeah. John is as a boss. And that's totally. The way, don't ask them to be anything else. That's completely okay. It's like the dog's more loyal. It's like, yeah.
What a lot of people don't know about me, because I refuse to talk about it because I can't stand the entire sector anymore. But for 7 years, I cut my teeth in Airbnb, large scale hotels all around the country, investors in so many states, like done it, coached it, teached it. And I ran into a kid in Costa Rica. I was down in Costa Rica hanging out. And I ran into this kid that knew me from social media that was down from Canada. And I met him. He was a young kid. I said, hey, man, how many properties are you going to have? He's like, dude, I'm going to have 200. And I said, yeah, sounds good. I said, I'll talk to you in 6 months. And he was like, no, you don't know me. And I saw him 6 months later. I said, how many properties do you want? He said, I'll take like three. I'm good, dude. And I was like, yeah. Like,
so what with the balance for me when I think about stuff like that is I want, you know, it's like stay hungry, stay foolish. Like mm-hmm. I'm not going to be the guy who's being like, oh, I couldn't do it, so you can't. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
At all. Dude, I want you to do it, but I would just say, be smart about it. Maybe that's, yeah. I would just like, don't freaking get divorced over it. Don't leverage yourself up to the gills. Don't think that because you got lucky once that you're good. Like, I would just say, try to be a little bit more. If I was talking to myself in my 20s, I'd be like, dude, you're right. You are hot shit, but mm-hmm. you're inexperienced, but you are mm-hmm. smart as shit.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to figure this out, but just take small bets, figure out what you know before you proclaim to the world that you're going to own 10,000 Airbnbs. That's all I would say. Yep. Just that's all I would say. And totally. If you want to do that, that's okay too. But just know mm-hmm. that if it doesn't work, you can always call me and I won't judge you for saying it's not working out, man. That's
all right. This is my favorite question I've been asking lately. And we kind of covered a little bit, but we'll see if you got another one. What is the worst take that you're seeing on social media these days?
God, I have so many.
I know.
What's
I know.
Worst?
Me and Nick just talk about gurus all the time, but I'd be interested to hear.
Oh God. I mean, that's where I want to go, obviously. The worst take that I would say is that I have so many I could say. Like, I almost need like a category from you.
It's go ahead.
Let me just think of one. Let me think of one that's like particularly offensive to me. I mean, just because it's on brand for me, I'll say when people say VAs run my company. I hate that take. It's like they're running your company. They're not VAs. Like literally, people will be like I only have one employee plus six VAs.
Yeah. No, you have seven employees.
No, you have seven employees. Like the fuck are you talking? You mean? One W-2? Okay, that's... But like, what? Oh yeah, they don't count? What?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so wow. That's
perfect
probably
example.
The,
do you know Chris Williams from System 6? You know him, no?
He and I have a sales call next week.
Okay, he's amazing. He's like my favorite human. We play golf. I met him on a golf course at a Dallas event, and then we hired him like a couple months later. I love the guy.
You guys live in Dallas?
I'm from Texas. At the moment, I'm in Pennsylvania, but I'm out in San Antonio soon. But he said, "Hey, man, I'm really excited. Like, you know, this is my vendor. He doesn't we don't work together. He's a company." And he said, "Hey, you know, like, thank you so much. Like, we appreciate the business." And I said, "No, that's not the thing." I said, "We're partners in this thing, and the only way I can do business is you do it well." And so, as a business owner, everybody that you come in contact with, whether they work for you, they're outsourced talent, whatever you want to call them, they're all part of your trip to go to where you're going. Like, meaning everybody in W-2, not W-2, it doesn't matter. Everybody involved. I can't sell you a furnace if my supplier doesn't give me the furnace. It's not that complicated. And so we're going to have a relationship where it's not, hey, do what I say. It's, hey, how can we win together? Right? How can we grow together? And that needs to be across the board, everybody that involves in the business. My favorite thing to do in the entire world is to hire young before they're ready and give them the freedom to make mistakes. Because
Of course.
they don't have bad habits, they're bought in more. And so that's an opportunity, but that is an understanding where I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to give you the leeway to get better. And I think, you know, one of the number one thing that business owners don't ask their employees, hey, can we do this better?
Yeah, how can I? Yeah.
Is there a way to do this better? It's not a dictatorship. It's, hey, you're better at this than me. How can we do this better?
Course. Yeah, I think it's this balance, right? Because I posted this video and it's called Lead Like the Great Conductors, and I watch it once a month, and it if you want to summarize how I lead, it is that 20-minute TED talk, and it talks about the role of the conductor. And it shows examples of great conductors. And one of them, the first guy, is pointing very directly and he's very demanding. And his orchestra wrote him a letter one day that said, "You make great music, but we hate working for you. Please quit." Because he wasn't giving them space to develop their narrative. And it shows other conductors, and it talks about what's a conductor do? They don't play the instrument. They are there if somebody's off cue to give them a cue to come back in line. But what they're doing is basically there are levels to control. And there's a level of control at this level, and there's a level of control at this level. And what a good conductor does is create the space for Austin to become the best version of himself. Not tell Austin what to do, but to create the space, the support, the momentum, the orchestra of people pushing forward, which lets you play the best music you can and contribute to the orchestra. And when I think about leadership like that, I know exactly what I need to do every day.
So great.
Yeah.
People want to find you. They want to check out your companies. How would they do that?
At Matzner is my Twitter. That's the easiest way.
I love it. Guys, if you got some value from this episode, send it to a friend, and we'll see you next time.